RadioInfluence.com.
Good evening, everyone. It is Friday, August 10th, 2018, and you are listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val
and Tracy Bean. That was nice and vanilla.
Yes, Frankie Val on the drums.
You know what? I love that. I love that. It's so classic.
That's it.
It is.
Yeah, I give that. I give credit to all my buddies in all of the bands that we've been in for however many years. They just start saying it whenever you know when a singer will start calling out his band behind him. Well, Frankie Val on the drums. That was it. Now when my brother calls me out because we still play together. He'll say, and Frankie Val on the drums, doing the best he can. So there you go.
You leave it to him. There's a YouTuber who was at the premiere, the Dinesh D'Souza premiere, and he looks like your brother.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I have to remember who it is and send it off to you.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got, I mean, I don't even know how to explain how much we've got to cover in this show and how much has happened in the past week. It may end up being one of those shows where I get tired of hearing my own voice. And I know, Frank, you've got a ton to add, too. But it's an overwhelming sort of web we find ourselves in over the past week. Thoughts on what you think has been happening?
What I was saying, what you and I were talking about last night was pretty much, if you really assess what is going on in the news cycle over the course of the entire summer, it on the surface would seem like it is a dull, boring, slow-moving, slow like molasses kind of a summer. And, you know, you would think that it wouldn't be this way. You think it would be fireworks every week because of the what we're leading up to. Now we are underneath the three-month mark going up to a very pivotal and what could be just equally historic midterm election. And still, it seemed like nothing's going on. But when you actually take finer looks at what is happening in between the sensationalism for any number of topics, whatever is being rolled up the flagpole every week by the media to do their bidding and to try to soften up the ground and make the ground a little bit more fertile for the voters that they're trying to energize for said midterms. If you really look deeper, it seems to me, in my untrained eye, that there are chess pieces being moved into position, that things are happening, that those out there who have information, like John Solomon, who continues to do some trailblazing kind of reporting here, it seems like there is information out there and there is a larger picture that some people know, and they are biding their time and they are giving us pieces. And there is, it's almost like in The Office when it was one of the Christmas episodes and Michael Scott is sending Dwight a piece to his present every day, so that every little bit you're starting to get a little bit more of a defined and developed picture. And especially what's going on right now with John Solomon, which I'm sure that we're going to be talking about. That's just what it's coming down to for me. On the surface, it looks like just a hazy, slow, hot, wildfire-ridden summer. And then on the other hand, underneath all of that, there is the makings of what could be a very, very explosive October, a number of October surprises. And I don't know. I'd like to talk about that with you.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. As a matter of fact, it's almost a little bit I got to be careful how I say this. I'm not concerned about it, but it's almost a little bit concerning in a way, the way these pieces are trickling out, only because there's somebody or people, a group of people, and we're not exactly sure who, flicking these reporters at certain times.
Flicking how?
Like, here, say this now. Okay, it's good for this now. Okay, you can put that out now. So that it happens in the right time, so that it doesn't screw anything up that could be going on behind the scenes. And then, you know, given what, before we dive into everything, what the WikiLeaks tweet with that letter on August 1st, the Senate Intelligence Committee wrote a letter to Julian Assange inviting him to come to the States to testify behind closed doors about Russian interference into the 2016 election. Right. And it's almost as though they were trying to get out in front of this.
So what do you think? What do you think that can possibly even be? Like, let's say he comes on over to the United States and they're talking to each other. And this is a group of people who have obviously been trying to keep the hoax alive. They had it in their power to stop it a long time ago. But instead, they're laying down cover fire. Both sides, the Uniparty, working in tandem to continue this nonsense and to allow the media, their friends in the media, to continue the barrage on not only the president and the presidency, but the rest of the country. What kind of getting out ahead of this could this possibly be at this point? Is this somebody's going to try to say, hey, you know what? Actually, there is nothing here. Or we didn't have this information to begin with, but now we want to suggest. I mean, the Democrats have already told people stop talking about impeachment.
Yeah.
They've told you very slowly but surely they have tried to back their base off of the more insane things that they had been asking for when Trump-Russia collusion was all but certain to them. But now that it seems that, you know, they're trying to degrade what they're looking for, the charges they're looking for and pursuing, this obstruction nonsense. They're talking about the legality of his tweets now. It really is just it's pathetic to what it looks like cats playing with, you know, dust bunnies. It's ridiculous. So what the hell could they possibly be getting out ahead of? What do you think the pivot could actually be?
Well, I think what they could possibly be doing, if you look at this from a strategic standpoint, Julian Assange has a lot more than he's released. They've tried putting pressure on him to keep his mouth shut, and they've taken his internet away. They've got Ecuador threatening to remove asylum. They've got him being ousted from the embassy. You know, all these things that have been going on behind the scenes for so long now. And I think that this is a okay, if you shut up and you keep your mouth shut, Assange, and you don't say that you didn't get this stuff from Russia, and you don't say that, you know, you don't release whatever information it is you've been talking to us about releasing behind the scenes, which could be what's going on right now, then you'll be okay. And let's get you in person in order for you to get on the record doing that.
All right, let me ask you then. From your gut feeling or anything else you've seen over the years regarding Assange, his character, and what he's committed his life to, do you believe that he's a man that would take a deal like that, that would yes, put him in a little bit better position to lead a little bit more of a free life, or a life that is that is reflective of a free person, because he has been a prisoner for years now? Do you think that he would go back on his dedication to the truth and exposing power power centers that have been corrupted and that are working against the interest of a free society? Do you think that he would go back on all that just to ensure that he has a little bit more freedom for himself as he goes into the later parts of his life?
No, because I think that he's already had the opportunity to do that in the Comey deal, and he refused. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
Assange refused, you say?
Yeah, I think that what happened was that Comey, that they went to him and he offered up the information about how Russia wasn't involved with the hack of the DNC, or the leak of the DNC and the hack of Podesta's emails. And he wanted to offer that technical proof to them. They said, we don't want that. And he said, well, then, you know, I'm not going to say something that I don't want to say. And the deal fell apart. Comey and Warner had that discussion.
That's interesting.
That's my thought. That's what I'm thinking. I think Julian Assange is, his principles are very, very, his principles in terms of his own work, in terms of his own standards. I mean, the man has never lied about anything in over 10 years. Never. It's one of, even if he's an egotistical, you know, maniac, which I have no evidence that he is, he cares very much about the principles he used to found WikiLeaks. And I don't think that he would sell out those principles, given everything he's ever been through, just for the, you know, I think he'd rather go a martyr than to do that, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I definitely see where you're coming from, and it makes a lot more sense to consider that. Now, however, However, the Comey Warner limited immunity deal for Vault 7 arrangement fell apart doesn't even really matter to me. The fact of the matter that it fell apart tells you exactly what's going on there, because the trade-off was very, very clear. No matter how you spin it, the trade-off was clear. For limited immunity, whatever the hell that even meant, they did not really go into details there, but we know what was on the table. Technical data that was going to disprove this whole Russian collusion nonsense as far as where the source of the DNC leak stuff came from, in exchange for making sure that there was at least a semi-redacted version of Vault 7 that was released. When that falls through, it doesn't even matter at that point why it led to that point. There's only one reason really why that stuff would be nixed, and that would be to keep one thing alive and thinking that the other thing was worthy of giving up to preserve something far bigger.
And to be honest, the fact that they were willing to give that up when it implicated them in so many things for so many other things, you know, like the technical ability to make yourself look like you're someone else at a very high level, the remote control of cars, the everything, you know, all of it. It's crazy if you look at it on that scale, Frank.
Tracy, last night to end my show, I put it this way, because I had a caller call in and said, I think it was Mr. Brown called in. And he said, hey, I just wanted to remind everybody that what the Vault 7 leaks showed us is that they have the ability to make it seem like anybody from any government, any entity, and any NGO, whatever the hell it is, they can put anybody's fingerprints on anything to make anything going on. And I said, that's what I always try to bring up myself too. If you think about what fell apart between Julian Assange and the FBI and the SSCI, it was this Hobson's choice almost, but I don't even know. You should call it double-edged sword, a catch-22. I don't know what you want to call it. But in saying no, no, I don't want the Russia truth to come forward, we have too much staked on it over here personally and nationally with the media and everything else. To say we would rather keep that information out of the public sphere, you go ahead and go release Vault 7. The deal is off. What did Vault 7 do? Vault 7 actually hurt them just as much as anything else. Because it disproves, it actually casts an overbearing shadow of doubt on any evidence that they actually come forward with and show us to see that, that Russia went and did this and that. So it's like you deny one, but you still get the other one to say that we can't trust you anyway. And it's like one of those things where, the old elementary school adage was that blaming the dog for eating your homework. Well, now we know because of Vault 7 that the CIA and our intelligence communities can literally blame the dog and convince people that the dog ate the homework.
Yes, and they gave away the way they formulated the whole scheme by letting Vault 7 out. Now, the thing is this. Vault 7, the secrets inside of Vault 7, Julian Assange was offering, and he's offered, and this has been documented by Assange too, he was offering to show the government how it was capable of getting this information, how it got out. These are some of the most treasured secrets. They supposedly set our intelligence community back years in terms of proprietary information. It was such a big deal that that's when Pompeo came out and he did that overbearing speech about how much of a criminal Julian Assange was. So overbearing, in fact, that as I was going through it, I said, this can't be real. It's so overwhelming. It's so overt. It's so crazy. And, he offered to show them how to fix it so that it didn't happen again. And they still said, no, we don't want you because you're going to blow this whole coup attempt out of the water. Mm. It's really that big. I don't think many people, and it's hard to, the thing is, it's hard to focus on how big each of these little things are because there's so many things coming out that are just like, whoa. I had a debate with someone today about using the word bombshell in my tweets. I don't use the word bombshell very, very often, only when I personally feel this is like mega huge. And he's like, everybody uses bombshell all the time. The only way bombshell should be used is if there's an indictment. of somebody big. And I'm like, that's telling of where we've gotten to in this country.
Mm.
That bombshell means an indictment of a figure that has been, you know, a political figure in this country that's been in power for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And as far as Assange goes, too, we were talking about his character and trying to estimate from our civilian standpoint of what this guy would be willing to give up and how much he would be willing to compromise on his past stances and what his supposed mission statement is in life and with WikiLeaks. It's one of those things where I just feel like he really, as a prisoner, really needs to keep all of his cards close to his chest. He cannot let the information he has about the 2000 relating to the events in 2016 that have become what they have become right now. He can't give those away. That is the biggest bargaining chip he has for anything. He's got to be very careful with that one card right there. That's everything right there.
Yeah, he's got the dead man switch. He's got all the encryption keys. He's got his PGP backups. He's got all that stuff. I mean, you know, he has information that nobody else on the planet has. And I watched the show Blacklist. I think it's a fascinating show. One of the things that that Reddington has is that nobody knows exactly what he has and when he's going to use it. And he can use that to his advantage. It's basically really what keeps the man alive. If something happens to him, the dead man switch is triggered and all that stuff comes out without fear of consequence at that point. You know, he's very careful about what he publishes and what he redacts and stuff, Assange. He will redact, you know, most of the time he'll redact any messages that will cause harm or, you know, the threat of loss of life to innocent people. And he does his best anyway, as per him, to do stuff like that. So it's a very tricky situation, and he's been in public on several interviews with several different outlets saying it wasn't the Russians. So for him to, it would be a complete credibility smash for WikiLeaks for him to come out and do what they would like him to do.
Mm.
It would destroy the organization forever. Nobody would trust him anymore. Everyone would call him a sellout. It would be a public relations nightmare. They wouldn't have any more donations coming in. You understand what I mean? It's really yep. that big. He might as well, like, he's probably looking at it like, what's the difference at that point if I'm here or gone? And yep. my life's work is now tainted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's got nothing left but integrity. At this point, there's no play. Everything's coming down on you. You have all this weight on your shoulders. There's no reason to give up now. No, none.
Right, right.
And that's exactly the reason why he's so dangerous now.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why this invitation to come before the Senate Intelligence Committee is really, really head scratching.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying they're just doing it as like some kind of PR stunt. But I agree with that, that letter is a PR stunt in some ways. But in other ways, it's not. In other ways, it's saying, okay, we're dating this August 1st. We know we've got these stories coming out in the next week or two or three. To me, it's sort of akin, to how the New York Times came out with the piece on Crossfire Hurricane before that whole shebang came out.
Mm.
You know?
Indeed.
So it's a very, very complicated, interesting scenario we find ourselves in on a global scale with global cast of characters. And it's we're living through this right now. So what I wanted to do quickly for everybody, because we've been throwing these names around, everyone in the media has been talking about these names. You know, Bongino's podcast does a great job of going through them. But I don't know that many people know, like, at least a very basic background on some of these people. Do you want to go through the exercise of talking about their past history a little bit?
If you believe that is absolutely necessary, I would love to learn.
I don't think it's absolutely necessary, but it certainly adds context to what we're dealing with today. So Adam Waldman has a very storied history, Frank, a very, very storied history going way back to even 2009. He is a lawyer, a lobbyist. He's been in the entertainment industry, representing people in the entertainment industry. Johnny Depp is a name that comes to mind.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Also, the Jolie crew, Brad Pitt. He has a consulting firm called the Endeavor Group that works with folks like that on their foundational sort of dealings.
I think Brad's one of the good guys. I think that he's actually I think he's one of the good guys in Hollywood. I just think that he might be a little bit of a dupe. I don't know what it is. Like, how do you feel about Brad Pitt? I know this is completely off topic.
I don't know. I've never had a feeling about Brad Pitt either way.
I feel like, you know, have you ever watched the movie Burn After Reading?
No. Mm-mm.
Tracy, you would love this movie. First of all, it's all Washington, D.C. It's all, you know, spycraft kind of stuff, but it's not really. It's like it's just bumbling people and these interwoven lives. And, you know, it's awesome. But he's in there. It's a great cast. John Malkovich is in it. I think that he's more like this guy, Rusty, in Burn After Reading, where he's just a good guy who gets caught up in. I mean, Angelina Jolie has more.
Yeah.
She's got more baggage than anybody. I think that this guy, that he just gets caught up in it.
Yeah, he's kind of been used and abused, hasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Like, Keanu Reeves is a ball of white light.
You think?
Oh, yes. Keanu Reeves is one of the best men to have ever graced Hollywood.
Why do you say that?
He's got a fantastic humanitarian record, and I'm talking about real, like, down-to-earth human record. Hmm. As far, I mean, even going back to The Matrix, you know that most of his salary that he took from The Matrix movies, he gave to the CGI crew, and he donated millions to cancer research.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because he said if it weren't, I had more than enough money to live off of, and if it weren't for the computer graphics crew that worked on The Matrix, that movie would have been nothing. So there's that, and you could just tons of testimonials. In fact, I actually just reblogged something onto my Twitter of all these testimonials of people just meeting him in bars and restaurants and on subways, and there's always these videos of him getting up to let people sit on in his chair in the subway. He travels with other people. I'm telling you, he's one of the good guys.
Oh, that's good to know. He doesn't work with Waldman, from what I can see.
Good.
Yeah. So it's Jolie and Pitt and Johnny Depp and a whole bunch of other people. That's good to know about him, actually, that he was in The Matrix and he really is a good guy. That actually makes me feel good inside.
Me too.
Okay, cool. So Waldman has this history going back, and it seems like his history with Deripaska started in around 2009, 2010. But even before that, he was in the Justice Department of the Clinton White House, Clinton Connections. He was a Justice Department attorney, and then after that started this firm called Endeavor Group. And there's a lot of reporting about him from back in the day, going back to the 2010 time. And I'm going to put all this in the show notes for everybody if you feel like reading it. But there was an article about him in Business Insider in 2010 that the title of the article is "Meet the American Businessmen Who Are Working for Putin." And he's listed in there because of his work with Oleg Deripaska. He was. I mean, it's pretty crazy that Business Insider wrote this about him back in the day. American executives who are working on behalf of Putin. And he's the first one on the list. This was actually not 2010. This was 2014. My bad. So Deripaska had his visa revoked in 2006 because they thought he was in an organized crime and all kinds of other things. And in 2009, Waldman was brought on board to try and lobby for Deripaska, a name we all know, to get back into the United States to do business. And because of that, he was forced to file a FARA registration with the government, in which Sergey Lavrov, the prime minister of foreign affairs for Russia, actually wrote a letter to Waldman on behalf of the Russian Federation to thank him for doing the work that he was doing to try and get Deripaska's visa restored so that he could come back into the country. He was the attorney that worked with Deripaska on the failed bid to get Levinson out of Iran. He also has represented in the past Sergey Lavrov himself.
And this is a guy who is, it's amazing. It's remarkable. Remarkable. Especially talking about the guy who's working with Christopher Steele and, of course, a cast of characters who are working to throw Russian ties onto someone else.
Yeah, but listen to this story, too. Not without controversy in the Obama administration on several occasions. Deripaska, represented by Waldman, was part of a failed bid with a Russian-based consortium to buy Opel during the Obama administration's auto industry bailout. In 2009, Waldman and Co. met with Stephen Ratner, then head of the Auto Task Force, and Commerce Secretary Gary Locke to try to smooth the way for the acquisition of Opel. That deal fell apart.
Huh.
So the reason why I'm positioning things this way is because it's important to take this history and look at it from a higher altitude to try and determine or use our intuition to determine what motivations or hard feelings or whatever may exist as we move forward. Understand what I mean?
Yes.
So we've got Waldman, long history with Deripaska, long history of failed negotiations on behalf of Deripaska and the U.S. government in terms of the 2009, 10, Levinson thing and the auto bailout thing, both of which were rebuked by the Justice Department or by the State Department, I should say, and the Obama administration. We have Waldman representing Christopher Steele. We have Waldman representing Sergey Lavrov. We have Waldman representing Julian Assange, all while he's mixed up in humanitarian stuff all over, quote, humanitarian stuff all over the country with celebrities and Hollywood and movies and all kinds of things.
Man, you know, these people, they have some life.
Yeah.
I think about the clientele. You were talking about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that was made just by being on retainer of one client.
Well, yeah, we had some tech difficulties. That part got cut off. But yeah, $367,000 in legal fees from Deripaska as of 2010. And that spanned about a year and a half's worth of work.
Year and a half's worth of work, $300,000+ from one client. I can't comprehend this kind of living. As long as I'm able to get up and leave the house and go to a diner to have a cup of coffee without checking my bank account to see if I have enough in there, I'm happy. Yeah. I'm just happy with that.
You got to think about it, though. You know, it's a double-edged sword, Frank, right? Because a lot of these people that make this money, like when I was looking into Blumenthal, for example, he makes all this. I mean, all this money, all these connections. You know how many people in his family have died mysteriously? It's like a double-edged sword. You know the stress that must be on this man? Like, not that I sympathize with Waldman, but do you know the stress that must be on him right now? Is it worth it?
Yeah. No, I have to imagine. Well, listen, it doesn't matter whether or not you're rubbing shoulders with people that are active on an international level with such intrigue and so many connections to government, and which is, you know, it's the same thing as this. You make that much money and you represent people who are in bed with government and government-related entities and big corporations. They're all in bed together. They're all the same thing. It's pretty much like being a numbers runner for the mafia. Eventually, after one time, and this is the reason why government, it needs to be small, because this is just the way that human beings work. We form cliques and gangs, and we look out for each other, and we want to wash out the competition. Any kind of advantage that we can get over other people, we will. It comes in so many forms. Look at Major League Baseball or professional sports in general, and steroids. It's the same exact thing. And when you look at this, you say, wow, well, they're pretty much just, you know, hanging out with the mafia the entire time. It really is one of those things where how do you separate yourself from that and the stress that's involved, and whether or not it is actually ever worth it? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, even if you're not involved in politics and global stuff, like if you're just like a multimillionaire, how many people want your head? I mean, you know, like people generally are the one thing I used to be a lot more like cutthroat and jealous of people that did better than me when I was like in my early 20s. Now I'm happy for people that do well. Like, I want people to succeed. You know what I mean? Like, if we could just fix that, I think we'd go so much further. There's enough for, if you work hard and you do the right thing and you lead your life with integrity and you know, there's enough for everybody. There really is.
There's a reason why there is a long negative track record of what happens to people after they win lottery jackpots.
Yeah.
Those are definitely not people that are hooked up in any kind of international circles of influence and power brokering or anything like that. It is just what befalls a person once massive amounts of money come into the fold. It doesn't even matter. And then you add on top of it the power structure that we were just referencing to. You add that into the mix of the money and all that stuff. That's when it starts becoming increasingly more dangerous just to live your life. It's already dangerous when you have money, but then there's this. It's really interesting.
It is. It's something I don't think many people talk about, because most people are like, who the F cares? It's these people are, you know, they did it to themselves sort of thing, and they're not necessarily on the up and up a lot of the time. So no sympathy, right?
Oh, it's very important that people get that down, because once you have those thoughts and you're able to actually look at this from that perspective, it reaffirms one thing time and time again. Human nature. This is the one thing about human nature. So it's the reason why socialism doesn't work. Because you can't account for perfect knowledge when human beings are involved. Great socialism, a great theory, wrong species. Mm. That's what it comes down to. And when you look at this and you see these people, whether they're government related or not, and the problems they're having, and the stress that comes down, and the scandal that is created, and the really bad predicaments people find themselves in, it is a reminder time and time again why you need to be able to take human behavioral influences away from people on a mass level to the greatest degree that you can, and that applies to governing as well.
Yeah, it's so overwhelming. I mean, it's overwhelming. People, it's overwhelming. It really is. If you ever like sat down on the back porch with a cup of coffee and just thought about this stuff for like I do for way too long, it gets overwhelming.
Yep.
Concepts, all the things that you're saying. You're brilliant with that stuff, by the way. I love it.
I'm just neurotic.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe. We can move into Warner now. Mark Warner, vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Again, the most corrupt committee ever. He has an interesting past, Frank. A very interesting past. He didn't start out as a politician. You know who he started out as?
He started out as Mr. Ed, because he looks like a horse.
He does. You're absolutely right.
Go ahead, though.
He's been a Clinton backer for a really long time, but he started his beginnings were as a successful businessman in the cell phone industry. He was an early investor into Nextel. He was actually a broker for mobile licensing. He kind of created the whole structure by which cell companies would license mobile phones. It was an early way before the government came in that mobile phones were doing business. He made a lot of money in the tech industry, a whole lot of money. And he was actually thinking of running for president in 2008. He backed Hillary Clinton as early as 2014. And, you know, he's got a very storied past in terms of his connections with tech giants. Hmm. Tech giants, just so you know. But he made it into the, you know, into Congress, and now, and he's the Senate Intelligence Committee's vice chair. And, we're going to get into now a little bit more of the beginnings of the story about the leaks and stuff like that. And Assange and all of that intrigue. So the whole entire time this stuff has been going on, the Senate Intelligence Committee has been accusing Nunes of being this ridiculously horrific leaker. Which I'm sure you can speak to why that's interesting, Frank, given what you've done a really good job talking about Wolf. So I'd like for you to step in and explain why that's another case of pointing the finger at somebody who's doing what you're doing.
Oh, as far as Nunes goes?
Yeah, like as far as Warner and the leaks and everything with the Senate Intelligence Committee.
It's crystal clear. It's crystal clear. I mean, first of all, for anybody, just keep asking yourself, why the hell would anybody want pretend to be on the side of wanting to uncover something and wanting to right a wrong, whether that wrong is Russian meddling in an election, or even worse, Russians meddling in an election in tandem, in cahoots with one of the election's main candidates? Why on earth would you ever stand and pretend to be for getting to the bottom of a situation as drastic as that, but at the same time not want any information about that to be laid out on the table so that we can all analyze what's going on honestly and really get to the bottom of it? And of course, when you look at what Nunes is doing in making requests for all of the documents that you would think people would want to analyze closely and swiftly as not to drag this out, you would think that that would be the thing everybody wants to do. But if you just watch, once again, the human behavior, someone like Nunes is asking for documents, is asking for disclosure, is asking for an opening up of the sources to be able to get down to the bottom of an issue that is tearing apart the country. And what's going on? Other people are accusing him of going above and beyond to politicize something, to this and that. Let's investigate him. He's stepping outside the bounds. Outside the bounds of what? It seems like the bounds are, do not take this any farther than it, than don't take this beyond the pale, so that we are talking about this in any other fashion than how Jake Tapper and Brian Stelter are squeaking about it on a nightly basis. Don't take this anywhere else. That's what it comes down to. You don't even need to be someone who has been studying this shit for years. Just what does the behavior tell you? There's one person that wants to put all the cards out on the table, and there's other people who are accusing him of what? Obstruction? Obstruction for wanting to examine the evidence? It's ridiculous.
You need to do me a favor and do your impression.
Of who?
I think Brian Stelter? Yes.
it's just my Mickey Mouse. I love when he sits there. I went over this the other night with a buddy of mine, Ping Trip. He was on my show, and I wanted him on because he did a Brian Stelter challenge where he just tried to listen to Brian Stelter for as long as he could without, you know, having his carotid artery bust open. And I'm listening to this man. And first of all, Tracy, do you know that Brian Stelter is my age? He's 33 years old.
Yes.
You knew that?
Yeah.
Not only did I know that this wad of dough is my age.
Wad of dough.
And not only did I just realize this wad of dough, this talking wad of dough is my age, but I want to know why the hell he's on television. Somebody has got to make me understand how a man of his stature, of his look, that awful smile, that twisted, crooked smile of his, and this voice. Why the hell? Why is he in any kind of medium except blogging with a voice like that, with a face like that? Oh, the Trump administration is a hate movement. And then every night he looks at you and he goes, the act is just, I can't, I see, I'm dying right now. I'm dying inside.
I had to mute the microphone.
I'm dying inside.
Oh my gosh. I love it. I was listening to your show the other day. You're just like, I was hysterical. I'm like, why did he stop? I wanted him to keep going on Stelter.
No, he wanted to. The other night he was talking about how the Trump administration is a hate move. It's part of a hate movement. And then he goes and he picks up one of Trump's tweets and he says, let's dissect this tweet. And I'm thinking to myself, dissecting the tweet, you little runt, you. I don't know how it's like the runt of the litter. I don't know how he's on television. What are they thinking?
Okay. Thank you.
I'll get in trouble. You just keep laughing. I'll be the one that gets in trouble.
Oh, goodness. I love you. Okay. So we have Warner talking to Waldman through text about a cast of characters a mile long, who's also at the same time always just blaming Devin Nunes for leaking things out to the press. When meanwhile, we now know that Wolf, who worked as like the security dude for the Senate committee, is the one who was leaking everything out. It's the irony is just amazing. And you know, Deripaska is his own show, but don't forget that he also has connections to John McCain. Make sure you keep that in at least the forefront of your mind. He was there for the 73rd birthday party and all kinds of other things. I mean, there's connections everywhere there with them. So basically what I wanted to try and go through then before, you know, I wanted to hit on John Solomon's piece. I wanted to hit on this whole Waldman thing. I think we're going to just explain it, you know, as best as we can here. Basically, Waldman is texting Warner. He's brokering all kinds of deals between everybody. He's talking to Warner on the Senate Intelligence Committee. about Steele, Deripaska, and Assange concurrently. Now we've learned, well, let's talk about what he was talking to them about first. He was talking to them about getting Steele in front of the committee, and he wanted to do it. Steele wanted to do it proper channel with letters from Congress. Warner wasn't interested in that. He wanted a personal phone call, and Steele was pushing back against it. I don't believe that it ever worked out. And we have these text messages. We can read through them because Fox News released them in February of this year. Right after, coincidentally, remember when Sean Hannity's account came down?
Yes.
Another parody account came up and got in touch with Assange directly.
Mm-hmm.
And Assange messaged Hannity and said, hey, I've got some interesting information on Warner. And then the fake Hannity tried to like set up a call or get the information through Twitter. And Assange was like, secure channels. And then a few weeks later, we got these text messages. Very interesting to me. So Fox News releases these text messages that the whole series of them that Waldman is talking to Warner in. And then we also get them again in part when John Solomon starts writing his pieces, except there are some subtle differences between them, one of which being the carrier on the phone that's being used for the print screens, another being the positioning of the text bubbles that are there. The content is all the same, but the text bubbles are in different places and the positioning is different and the carrier is different. Following?
Yes.
So basically, Waldman is texting back and forth with Warner trying to broker a deal for us for Deripaska to come and testify in front of the committee. He wants immunity. Then there's contrary reportings that say he doesn't want immunity, but his conditions were all nullified. Nope, no deals for you, Deripaska. Sorry. We know that Deripaska was approached by the FBI, and everybody's just taking this at face value. Like, they approached him asking him what he knew about Paul Manafort being involved in this Russian collusion scam a few months before the election. I don't understand why nobody's looking at it from the angle of maybe they were approaching him to use him as one of their supporting factors in bolstering the fact that Manafort was involved in some kind of collusion scam. Do you understand what I mean? Hey, yeah. Deripaska, would you please vouch for the fact that, yes, you have a relationship with him and this is what he's doing? And Deripaska saying, hell no. Instead of just, hey, by the way, we think Paul Manafort's involved in this. And Deripaska saying, ha, 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 you're wrong.
That's exactly it. Yeah. And to have that even get out that he laughed.
Yeah.
It's actually laughter exchange. But wait a second. You're serious.
Well, the reason why that got out is because Waldman spoke to Solomon. So, of course, Waldman isn't going to, and Deripaska might have even spoken to Solomon. I think he gave a quote to Solomon in one of his articles. So it's interesting to me that, of course, you know, Waldman's not going to, he's not going to screw everything up by saying, yeah, they wanted Deripaska to be in on it. Or maybe that's going to come out later. Who knows? You know, there's so many angles of how this could go.
Right.
But he broke the story about this, and he tied in the prior story about Levinson because one of the agents that came in was involved in that Levinson deal as well. Yeah. So they're brokering all kinds of deals for all these people. The Steele deal was for him to come in and testify officially, and those channels of communication broke down. The Deripaska deal was, hey, I'm talking to the guy. You know, we need to get him in here. He wants to talk, but he wants immunity. That broke down. Then we have the Assange deal going on. He's trying to broker a deal for Assange at the same exact time, saying that Assange wanted to come and he was going to offer up to them, like we spoke about in the beginning, the fact that Russia wasn't behind the hack of the DNC and wasn't behind the Podesta email hack and they wanted nothing to do with it. Comey and Warner decide to nix that deal and don't even let the U.S. attorney or the director of counterintelligence for that division, Loftman, know. And he's even floored by it. So everybody's all surprised that everything broke down. And Comey and Warner were the ones responsible for making the decision.
Oh. And yet, throw everything you got at Devin Nunes because there's something wrong going on there.
Yeah, let's leak the audio of him having integrity and saying the exact same thing in private that he said in outwardly. Like,
oh,
you're
talking about that like little dinner speech he made?
Yeah.
I heard a few clips on that David Webb show this morning, and I'm thinking to myself, what Like what is who was the other the Democrat who has been running? What's his name with something? I forget. Somebody making a big stink about this, and I've listened to the clips a couple times. Like, what is everybody? What's so onerous about this? What is everybody?
Nothing. It's Maddow released this crap.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, like, what is this? And it hasn't Rachel Maddow embarrassed herself enough?
I know.
At this point, with the one piece of paper, the tax returns that show that Donald Trump paid more in taxes than her entire network did.
Yeah.
I wanted. What is wrong with people? These. Oh my God, they're masochists.
They are
sadists.
Yes,
they love it. Oh my God, they
love
it.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have a private and a public position like Hillary Clinton. Somebody said that below my thread on it the other day. There is no private and public position change with Devin Nunes. He's pretty much straight and narrow. Keep him elected. Keep him in office, people.
This is why I think that it is very important that anybody who has a platform like you, like me, I have a small platform. Everybody else, you know, all of the people that we know that they do great work on Twitter and all that. It is so important to keep the pressure on for elections. Remember always, everybody at home, the only reason why the elections turned out in 2016 the way it was is because we as individuals circumvented the mainstream media. We used memes, we used jokes, we used real research to get around the lies and the spin and the bullshit polling and all that other stuff, and we pulled one out. That enthusiasm has got to stick around because this is enormous right here.
It's
just so enormous. And what were we just talking about again that I'm going nuts and I'm forgetting it? It was Devin Nunes and his public and private positions.
Yeah.
What after that?
It was the leak that the recording that someone made of him at the dinner being leaked out to Maddow. And the fact that the Senate Intelligence Committee and everyone else, they tried to get him on FEC violations. They've tried to get him on the man's been put through the ringer, just like Jim Jordan, who, by the way, real quick, before we move on to the markets work piece we want to talk about and then close it out, believe it or not. The person that said he knew about these sexual allegations, Jim Jordan, he came out and retracted that and said, I'm sorry, I was misquoted. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, hello. Thank goodness he did it, but Jesus, put the man through hell. Did you see him, Jim Jordan, at the rally for Trump?
I saw the stills. I didn't watch any of the video.
What a humble, beautiful person he is. You can just see it. There are just people that just shines through in. And Jim Jordan is one of them. Devin Nunes is another. Really?
Yeah. No, you know, here's the other thing I wanted. And I guess this ties into everything I said about people as individuals circumventing the media and all of that and going around and really making this all a reality. When you look at what is coming out of these, out of the, I would have to say the magicians in the mainstream media, the Rip Van Winkle media that goes to sleep and wakes up years later and takes stances on things that they ignored however many years before. And they use word magic and all this stuff. I think about the DNC leaks. I said it last night. What is the real purpose? What would be the real purpose of dropping all these bombs? Do we really think that it is going to destroy, is going to make people come away from one party or the other to see what's going on there? If there wasn't a mass exodus of people who left the Democrat Party after they saw what was revealed in 2016, what would possibly motivate people in 2018 when you have more stuff coming out about what was then perpetrated for the whole Russia thing and FISA abuse and anything else and how corrupt our committees are and all that. And it was brought up last night, and I think it was a really good point that we need to be able to bring this information to the forefront to make sure that those who came out and those who are not eating the pablum anymore are going and they're staying enthusiastic. I think there's a really, really sizable portion of people who will never, ever be able to wake up from this nightmare. And it's not really about whether or not the bombs that are going to be dropped are going to change anybody's minds. It's about whether or not the bombs that are going to be dropped are going to get people who helped make 2016 what it was to continue to fight. Because those people are those. That's where all the power is right now. Those people have to stay energized, because I think that the hope of waking up tens of millions of more people to some kind of a nightmare that they've been mired in, and they don't even know it. I think that is a fat chance at this point.
If I didn't see the success of the walk away campaign from a social standpoint, I would agree with you. But I think that the people that are walking away due to the contradictory positions the Democratic Party has, like both in how they represent themselves and how they represent the people inside of the party, were, I think that gives us the opportunity, just as we had the opportunity, you know, back when Trump was being maligned by the media all the time, to teach these folks what's really been going on. And those people are leaving the Democratic Party. So I stand in a little bit of contrast to you, but I definitely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'm hoping that can, and I'm a big believer in the walkaway movement, and I love what it's done so far, and I see it as a necessary thing. And as that takes its own course, and as that continues to develop in its own way, I just really maintain that point. We've got to keep the people who were motivated 2 years ago motivated, because complacency is not going. It's like we say it over and over again, herding cats. And that's what you have when you walk away from progressivism. Progressivism is a cult-like mentality. On the other side of that, we, on the other hand, are willing to eat our own on the smallest of reasons. everybody declares war on each other constantly. There's no agreement on our side. That's the problem here.
No, I know. We don't even get into that.
Yeah. Well, let's keep going.
All right. So the last thing I think I want to cover is this amazing piece by Jeff at themarketswork.com that he wrote about Julian Assange. Is Julian Assange our guy? And I'm just going to read an excerpt of this because it's really, really, really well done with sourcing. It'll be, again, in the show notes for today, which will be chock full of information. You know, if you guys are going on a trip somewhere, you're going to be in the car, you got a lot of laundry to do or a lot of cleaning to do. I hate to do this because I don't do it often, but my channel, like seriously, I'll put a bunch of videos in there. I've been covering this stuff in detail and they all kind of piggyback off one another. You can catch up in a day's worth of chores and have like a lot of stuff in your toolbox that you can use for background moving forward. But anyway, I digress. Assange. Assange, I'm just going to read some of this. Assange lives in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. He's been under threat of extradition to the United States. Charges in Sweden have been dropped. In the UK, Assange faces a minor charge of skipping bail. It is extradition to the US that he fears for his role in leaking secrets via WikiLeaks. In early 2017, efforts began to, quote, try to get Assange to agree to risk mitigation, essentially limiting some classified CIA information he may release in the future. Waldman was Deripaska's attorney. He may have also acted in that capacity for Assange, which he did, and we know that because we've gotten the proof now. Waldman was asked by Assange's team to work pro bono, and he did. He met at least 9 times with Assange. Waldman met with Assange 9 times in the Ecuadorian embassy, and we're finding out today, this isn't in the Markets Work piece, that Deripaska also met with Assange in the embassy. Interesting. Yes. So the immunity deal talks became serious, you know, like we were talking about earlier. And there was an email that went back and forth about what this immunity should actually be. And right after this immunity email between Loftman and Waldman, it's where those text messages come into play. So from a February 16th, 2017, Waldman text. I just want to underscore my opinion and the reason I got involved. This guy is going to do something catastrophic for the Dems, Obama, CIA, and national security. I hope someone will consider getting him to the U.S. to ameliorate the damage. On March 17th, Waldman writes, Chris Steele asked me to call you. Then, on March 31st, my other guy, like Steele, very mistrustful of the government. He's been essentially shut out of the country and dragged through the mud. I explored this question with him last night in person. And then update regarding my other guy. My contact at the DOJ has gone silent for 72 hours. I gave him what he asked for and now don't hear from him. Please let me know if you hear anything. Here's the tension, right? Here's the Waldman government tension. And then one more on April 10th. Steele would like to get a bipartisan letter from the committee. Assange, I convinced him to make serious and important concessions, and I'm discussing those with DOJ. Deripaska, willing to testify to Congress, but interested in the state of play with Manafort. I'll be with him next Tuesday for a week. It gets stranger still. Somewhere during the negotiations, Warner spoke with Comey, and a stand-down issue was ordered. WikiLeaks on April 7th releases a new cache of documents through Vault 7. Negotiations hit a brick wall. Following an August 16th meeting with Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, which I've got videos on as well, Julian Assange told the congressman on Tuesday he can prove the leaked DNC documents he published did not come from Russia and promised additional helpful information about the leaks in the near future. Rohrabacher said Julian emphatically stated the Russians were not involved in the hacking or disclosure and indicated he's open to further discussions regarding specific information about the DNC email incident that's currently unknown to the public. Assange has never been caught lying. If his claims are true, they help place varying stances into perspective. In light of the events highlighted above, I don't see Steele's text as sympathetic to Assange. If Assange is our guy, if it is Assange, it seems to me Steele wanted him to stay right where he was in the embassy. Bruce Orr shared the same sentiment. It's really an interesting thing. And we'll close out with this, Frank, and you let me know your opinion before we go. Do you remember when the London airport was closed down because of a bomb threat and one single plane took off?
Actually, I don't. I don't remember this.
London Airport.
Thank God you're here. When did this happen?
There was a terrorist threat or a bomb or some kind of explosion at the airport in London. They closed it down.
I did not remember this at all.
February 12th, 2018.
So then who do you think was on the plane?
I don't know.
It's a big, big, big world out there. But it's getting smaller.
It is. And, you know, I'm looking into this. There was supposedly a World War II bomb that was found there, but I don't think that was the time. There was one before that, which makes it even more conspiratorial. I could swear there was some kind of an attack at the airport and they were forced to close it all down before then. If there were two and they closed down the airport again, that would make it even more crazy. Let's see. Bear with me, folks.
Oh, I'm waiting.
Can't find it. Stay tuned!
Stay tuned on the next edition when the Google search comes back.
I'm going to find this now. It's going to bother me all day. You guys have been listening to The Dark to Light Podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums
and Tracy Beans. You can find our podcast on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. Is it TuneIn Radio or just TuneIn?
I think it's just TuneIn.
Yeah. Okay, so you can find it on Apple, iTunes. You can find it on Google Play. You can find it on Stitcher, TuneIn, and RadioInfluence.com. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Marquise McLaughlin, who lost his life to, I think a guy's name was Michael Krejcha. The fact that there's still not an arrest being made, I'm just saying from my vantage point, is scary as hell, okay? I've watched that thing 100 times. I understand it has to go to court. Everything has to go to court. That's the American way. But since when is the American way just saying you're scared for your life? Is that the American way? As a 300-pound plus black man, I'm scared to talk to anybody anymore because I might walk on an elevator and some guy might be scared for his life and kill me. Now, obviously, Marquise McLaughlin did more than that, but did Trayvon Martin do more than that? Did Trayvon Martin do anything worse than step on an elevator, which I do all the time, or walk in a neighborhood, which I do all the time? This is scary, man. This is scary that I can watch that video 100 times and Michael Krejcha is still not in jail or arrested. You don't have to keep him in jail. Arrest his ass. There's nothing that you can find in that tape that can warrant an arrest. I'm missing the whole thing, if that's the case.
You can find Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.